many adoptions. Adoptions these days are more often not conversions, given the reality of the lack of Jewish children to adopt. Or are there any divorces? Divorces, of course, as you well know, can create chalila mamzeres issues. You are the one who's responsible. I hate to put on your slim shoulders, but that's the reality. If you miscarry kiddushin, the buck stops with you, nobody else. You are required to figure it out. Now, you ask questions. If they tell you no, so you're, you know, I believe that you're allowed to rely on them. Again, I'm assuming you're dealing with a situation of observant Jews. If the people whom you are marrying are themselves not observant, then you have a much bigger problem. Because you have to know if you can trust them or not trust them with what they're saying. But assuming we're starting off with the people, the couple is an observant couple, and they're coming to you to ask to do the wedding, you ask them that question. If they say no, so we can go on. If they say yes, then watch out. If the woman who, man or woman, who asked you to marry them, have been themselves previously married and divorced, you must receive a copy of the divorce certificate. It's called a ptur, which every bezin gives a ptur, every who does the wedding gives a ptur to the man and the woman. And don't say, well, yeah, sure, Rabbi this did it. Everyone knows. Everyone knows it's very good until you're the Masada Kedushin. You have to see the piece of paper signed by the bezin or by the rov, as the case may be, attesting to the fact that this man, this woman, that divorced the Kadas Moshe of Yisrael, and therefore they can remarry. If a parent was divorced of either of them, you have to ask a very painful question. Was your parent, who was a product of a previous woman who was previously divorced, the Chasen Kala themselves, or the father, or the grandfather, grandmother, whoever they know that there was a divorce, are they from the first marriage or the second marriage? From the second marriage, unfortunately, it's up to you to find out and make sure that there was a get for the first marriage. Because otherwise, you understand very well, you have a big, big problem. If a woman was married Orthodox, and let's say divorced conservative, and then remarried, this is to play it out reform, want to give every denomination a chance, then there's a big problem. Because the reform rabbi married an Ashes Ish, potentially, to another man, and the child is potentially mamzer. That's the worst case scenario. You have big problems. We always try to be lenient when it comes to mamzeris, but you know, we have a lot of coolest tricks up our sleeves, but you have to ask the basic facts. Okay. When it comes to conversions, it's much more bleak. Much more bleak. Because if you want to see to it that this marriage is 100% kosher, and everyone's 100% Jewish, you have to do a careful investigation. It's not enough. Just give me a reality check. Not enough. Rabbi X did it. Rabbi X is an Orthodox rabbi. Rabbi X could have been even more than an Orthodox rabbi. He was a great Orthodox rabbi. Prominent, as they call him today. Doesn't make it one whit of difference. You cannot rely on any conversion by anybody unless you know basic facts. A, of course, the bezin has to be kosher, and there should be a document attesting to the conversion. B, and here's where it gets a little tricky, if the conversion took place at a time that the individual who converted was observant, then, of course, the conversion is valid. Chas v'shalom to not accept conversions. This is not the Syrian community where they had their own cherem against it. We accept conversions, 100%. But they have to be done in a way which is completely proper, beyond reproach. Man or woman converts and they're observant from the get-go. That conversion is 100%. Ger tzedek, great. All too many conversions in this country, that's not the case. Many too many. I'm not discussing non-Orthodox. I'm talking about Orthodox. I would venture to say that most Orthodox conversions are likely in this category. Why? Because what is the motivation behind the vast majority of Orthodox conversions? Who wants to guess?
Marriage.
You got it. Now, if you're converting for the sake of marriage, you have to very much wonder what's going on over here. is a Jewish man and suddenly he's with a non-Jewish woman and they come to get married, oh, you have to do a conversion. How frum is the woman who's converting if the man who met her as a non-Jewish woman? You begin to wonder, right? Am I correct? Everyone with me? There are always exceptions to the rule, but you have to be very careful. It doesn't matter who signed on it. You have to do your research. Adoptions, which are often conversions these days, are also tricky. You all know the Gemara, get caught my bilan also adas bezin. Zochan lado shlava fanav. What's the schus? It's a schus. It's wonderful to be Jewish. That's true if you're from. But if you're not from, there are many who say that conversion is invalid. It's not a schus. Before the conversion, you were an ethical person. You were chassidi u'mas olam. Now that you convert, if the conversion were to be valid, you'd be a chotei u'machti every single time you treif and you mechal Shabbos, which you're likely to do because that's what the parents who adopted you were doing. So it's not a schus, you're not Jewish in the first place. So, Rav Moshe, the tshuva, maybe it's better to be a non-observant Jew than to be, we'll call it an observant non-Jew. Maybe. I'm willing to concede that it's maybe. Rav Yosha also seems to say it's maybe.
Why
what?
You just gave a
beautiful reason. I think the Torah opposite is stronger than the Torah in the other direction.
Well, what is this?
It's always good to be Jewish, because you're Jewish, whatever mitzvah you do, you get tzchak as a Jewish. But you don't know. You're an honest, you're a shogeg. Look, you can make a case for almost anything. But the fact that both Rav Moshe and Rav Yoshev, who were not small people, that they didn't say for sure. They said maybe. So I wouldn't sell them my chametz, right? So I said maybe the conversion is a valid conversion, notwithstanding the fact that the parents are not observant and the kids are not growing up in an observant lifestyle. Now I have to tell you, the RCA initially had a policy that if the couple who converts and adopts will promise to send the kid to day school, high school, whatever, then they will say, oh, that's great. And I was pressured by one of the rabbis some years ago when they started these discussions. Come on, no? I said, let's do a poll. Everything is by polls these days. I told this rabbi, go out and find out. Go to all these schools, speak to all the high school principals, of all those who came from non-observant homes. They were sent to 12 years, K through 12, as they say today, and check them out 5 years later when they're 22 or 3 years old. How many of them are from? If you tell them the majority are from, then I accept what you're saying. It's good enough. They went to school. Came back to me later and said, you cannot make that statement. I have a different version of what I think what the percentages really are, but it's too low to get into right now, sadly. So, therefore, bottom line is, it's not a schus if you assume that the person should be from, even if it's sent to yeshiva K to 12, because it just doesn't work. The parents aren't from, the kid's not going to be from in most cases. That's just the reality. We all have wonderful stories. We do. Nothing with gayrits. We have wonderful stories. Their kids went to school and they made their parents from and everyone's from and they have payas and shrivals. We all have these stories. But you have to work with statistics. Okay. Any questions so far? Okay. If the husband is a Kohen, you have a whole new set of conditions. Any Kohen in the room? Okay. Let's even have a single Kohen in the room. So that's not.
I've had a number of interesting questions that have come up also.
You?
Yeah.
Okay, I don't know. I'll talk about
not that I've actually got, like, people that have been suggested to me that have been, like,
I'm happy to be one of the rabbanim, what they call Sawyer with Sinai, which is also why you connect. And the question is, they put it on the questionnaire, are you Kohen eligible? It's there. Are you Kohen eligible? Now, we all know the pasuk says that a grusha, a divorced woman, may not marry a Kohen. What could be more clear than that? So now, we're not going into all the details now, but you should know that our rabbis are very creative. They have two ways to get out of the problem. Either they annul the first marriage, so she's not a grusha, or they decolonize the man. This is going on on a regular basis in certain circles. Not where I come from. But you should be aware. You should be aware. It's a serious problem. So too, a Kohen is not permitted to marry a Gioris, a convert. It's also, these are all, you know, documented. The most difficult problem is a woman. I got a call literally yesterday. I spoke about midnight to a rabbi in California. A boy's about to propose to a girl. He's a Kohen. And she had non-Jewish boyfriend. She wasn't from growing up. So Rambam says, a woman lives with a non-Jewish man. She's categorized as a zona. And they may not get married. So he asked, what about if the guy's not a Kohen? I said, maybe. You know, here's the problem. Rav Eliyashiv said that a Kohen should not be, no Kohen should go marry any girl who was not from and was on a university campus. Rav Eliyashiv was not only good in halacha, he also knew what was going on in the world. And is he right. Oh, is he right. Go on your internet, you'll find out that in the secular college campuses, a young lady spends 4 years in a secular college campus. What are the chances that she is a basula after all 4 years are up? I'll give you a number. Pick a number out of 100.
She's not from.
Not from.
2%.
Huh? 2%. 2%. Okay. 10%. You're charitable. Okay. Whatever it may be, you go on there. You'll find it. It's all documented. Everything's out there these days. She's a very, very small. And she's not from. She's gonna. I only have Jewish boyfriends. And this is not happening. She's gonna come from an unaffiliated family. Nothing. Not blaming her. How can I blame her? That's what the society is doing. Right? That's just. She's just doing what everyone else is doing. She's not a particularly rebellious girl. She's just doing what everyone's doing these days. You asked a different story about whether the guy's a Kohen or not a Kohen. That's a question. If the guy himself is not frum, his father wasn't frum, his grandfather wasn't frum, they didn't practice kahuna, so then there's a question that maybe he's not really a kohen. If they practice kahuna, it's not at all clear in our Moshe's Chuvis.
Even if his name is Kohen?
His name is Kohen proves nothing. Absolutely nothing. We have many, we all know people whose name is Kohen, we're not Kohen. This problem of Bali and Tshuva marrying each other, which is a serious issue, is probably going to go away soon. By the time you do your first wedding, it'll be gone by then. Why? Simple reason. After a number of years, all the mothers of these Kohanim, who are not from, are all Psulas Lakuna. Because they were also on university campus for 4 years. You know, now it's, you know, right? So in other words, a guy was born in the last 20 years, let's say, well, this is Hefker. So now, when he comes, he wants to marry a girl who was a Balas Tshuva, and she's a Asur LeKohen. And what about you? Well, I mean, I'm a Kohen, but how do I know? Because on my grandfather's grave, it says a Kohen, and they have the hands up, and the whole stuff, the Rav, you said the famous story, surrender to the will of the Almighty. Of course, the issue becomes, well, what kind of lifestyle did the mother lead when she was in college in the 80s? So to be in the 90s, these are the mothers of the people who grew up. So she had not, if it could document it, so she may be prohibited to her husband. That's part of the problem if you just start digging. But the guy you want to marry is not really a Kohen. Ooh, gets tricky.
He's
called a chola. If a Kohen marries a woman who lived with a non-Jewish man, according to the simple pshat, the child is a chola, same as if the Kohen married a grusha or married a gioris. The child is a chola. Chola means empty, no kedushas kahuna, and can marry whoever, you know, anyone who would play in Yisrael can marry. That may happen more and more as time goes on. Any questions? Okay. So you understand right now why that's someone else's psychological. Because it's a very big responsibility. Yeah?
I was thinking about the past parent. If the mother and father are both here.
That's an interesting question. The post will talk about I don't want to spend time on it because it's a not that common. There's another case which the post can talk about what happens in the case in which the mother converted while she was pregnant. We have cases like that. There's by Shmuel Paskins, she may not, the child, the daughter may not marry a Kohen. Paskins is a little more complex. I don't want to go into it. I have a lot on my agenda for today, so we'll leave it for the moment. Okay. I have one more question I ask every Chassan Kala, which is, did they do genetic testing? I think it's the Achrayas and the Masada Kedusha to find out. If they did, you should do the wedding. If they didn't, I would say, I'm not doing this wedding. I don't want to be responsible on my shoulders that you ignore the genetic testing. And Chalila v'chaselef, you know, very seriously problematic offspring. And why didn't I tell you? So I tell you. You do Ador Yesharim, okay, you want to do separate, you know, regular testing, also good. Something. Okay. Those are my questions that I ask in terms of whether they should be getting married or not in the first place. Good. Having determined that they can get married, we go into the details. I like to meet with the Chassan Kala as soon as possible. Yes?
If they have done genetic testing and there are issues in their matching, what do you recommend?
I won't do the wedding. I will not do such a wedding. You want to get married? I can't stop you. You want to have IVF or PGD with all these kinds of things. I can't give my blessing to such a wedding. Can't do it.
So how soon before you back to meet with them if you want to give them time?
Genetic testing should be done before they even come to me.
What? Rich is like a week before.
No, before they come to get, before they get engaged, they should be doing these things.
If they didn't,
I always tell the Chassan Kala, you want me to do the wedding, come to me as soon as possible. Uh-huh. They don't. I mean, it's negotiated later on. Okay. I have to be honest that there are cases where I even advocate IVF and PGD. I tied to the sasri. No. There are cases in which one of the members of this couple has a situation which is not recessive. The most famous ones that we know about are we call recessive. There's only a problem if both of them are carriers. So if both of them are carriers, there's usually 25% chance of a problem with the offspring. So what right do they have to get involved in the situation? Like he can marry someone else, she can marry someone else and live happily ever after. But there's some conditions that no matter who this woman marries, no matter who, is a potential problem. And therefore, they can either play Russian roulette or use IVF and PGD. In that kind of a case, I would do the wedding. Why? Have rachmanis on this girl. Well, she shouldn't marry anybody. She has no other alternative. So she finds a fellow who's willing to marry her despite the fact that he knows that there are genetic issues. I'm not saying he's doing the right thing or the wrong thing, but I'm not going to tell him he has to break it up. Someone has to marry her. She has to marry somebody, or vice versa. So those cases are different. But if they're both carriers, and they can both marry different people and not have any genetic problems, I don't think it's proper. They should put themselves into that massive lechatchil. That's what I think. They're already married. It's happened sometimes. They didn't get tested. Or Doreshim doesn't test for everything. And they got married, and they had a kid, and the kid had an issue. Oh, you guys both have some unpronounceable syndrome. So they're married already, so they're done. Okay, IVF, PGD, whatever you do, however you get out of the problem. But it's a big difference in the Chathchila and Bidiyah, where we come from. And the fact that they're in love, that's already... After Recha Kamoch. But just to try to be more halakhically prudent when it comes to these things. Okay, next. When does the wedding take place? So again, you have to make sure this is the right time. It should be 3 weeks, different parts of Sfira. Where it takes place? So there's a big discussion. Are you allowed to get married in the shul? Rav David Lifshitz, Zichrono Livracha, would never walk into a chuppah in shul in any conditions, ever. He's from this European background, who was a chair of the Chassam Sofer. They were copying the Goyim, they were doing churches. He would never walk in. If he had to go away, he'd come late. The Rav Zichrono Livracha had a different attitude. He wasn't such a big opponent of it based upon Chassam Sofer. He just felt it's an inappropriate activity for a shul. Shul is for davening, for learning, not to get married. Yes?
To not mean to be like the actual shul where you dive in a social hall?
Social halls have to go. No problem, social. Talk about the sanctuary, if I may use that expression. Because, of course, the difference would be between these two objections, what if it's a non-orthodox sanctuary? So it lacks kedushin. So according to the Rav, it's not a problem. According to the Rav Dov, it's a bigger problem. Shouldn't we walk in there in the first place? If I'm asked to go into a non-orthodox sanctuary, my response always is, well, what do the local rabbis think? The local rabbis are all, I've no problem walking in there. I'm not going to be holier than the Pope. But if the local rabbis are not happy, then I wouldn't go in. I can understand why rabbis should say that's a place which is out of bounds. We don't want to go into that institution because you have to have, we shouldn't blur the lines. We call today denominational lines. You know? We wish them all well, but we have to separate ourselves. But every community has its own rabbanim, its own policies. If you can't, I won't walk in. If there's a conservative place,
no, of course not.
Oh, well, I'm very lenient in these things. Just give me what the Rav said, what Rav David said. I'm following the Rav. The Rav did weddings, and I was at the place where the Rav did a wedding in the shul. Okay, not the ideal place. He did it. So, Orthodox shul. Non-Orthodox shul, I've done weddings in non-Orthodox shuls. But after checking out the local rabbis, that hey, everyone walks in there, that's the best catering hall in town. I'm not here to criticize them. Chas v'shalom. I'm just saying, I have my own policies about me, but I can't criticize anybody else. I've been in both of the five towns and in Teaneck, two main places of metropolitan New York, Ochevra. I've been in both, and in both places the rabbis go in, so they go in. I'm not gonna prophet Sitkus over here. Even though in Riverdale I don't go in. I don't. Okay, right. Okay, now setting a date for a wedding, you know, they have to come earlier to you, otherwise it's much too late to already set the date. People have problems with this. The cycle, they have to go on pills. Pills can be disastrous from the Hilchos Nida perspective sometimes. I recommend, I wrote something with a few doctors, I think it's in YU Torah, about what pills should be taken and shouldn't be taken. Feel free to consult it. To make a long story short, instead of the typical birth control pills, which women go on, which I object to for two reasons. One is, once they're on the pill, they'll keep it on another few years with the pill. They're used to it already, which I'm against. Number two, these pills break through, they're staining. I had many calls, you name it. I've had calls from the Yichud room, I've had calls at 4 o'clock in the morning from a hotel room. The list goes on. Tell you too many stories, but because the pills don't always work. There's a pill called Agestin, which always works. It's a different kind of a pill, and there's an argument with a couple of doctors. Taking at the right dosage has never failed. Okay, it's up to you to make sure that the chos and kala have some hilchos nida background, primarily the kala, because the main thing is her. She should have a class one on one class with many others, as the case may be. You're charized to make sure that she knows these halachas. And the chassid should also have a rebbe, at least some basic instruction. It's basics. Okay, now we start talking about the wedding itself. You have to talk to them about it early on, so give them a heads up, because most boys and girls are clueless. They've attended many weddings with their friends, but who's paying attention? You know. But now, all of a sudden, it's relevant. You have to know who's going to be the Eidik Suba. Eidik Suba should be people who understand Aramaic. They sign an Aramaic document, they should just know what it says. They should be able to sign their names in Hebrew. And Eidik Kiddushin, that's the most important keyword of any wedding is Eidik Kiddushin. They have to be kosher Eidis. Everybody else doesn't matter. The Eidik Kiddushin have to be upstanding Jews who are Shomer Mitzvahs. And Chalit, shouldn't be any Psul V'Eidis, Chas V'Shom. You don't want to do a wedding with Psul V'Eidis. I have stories here too. I was at a wedding where the Rosh Hashiva was Mesada Kedushin from out of the country, and two Eidim were designated to be Eidim Kedushin, and then some lady walked over to him and they gave her a kiss, and she gave him a kiss. I don't know what forgot. So he passed him on the spot. Passed the Eidim. Rambam. Rambam seems to say that it's a lav sheyesh b'malkus l'sukkah v'legal aserva. Boom, out. Who could die be zoyon v'kotzef? So a paste for you to get eight kedushin who are not going to be passed by anybody at the for any reason. It's letting you know. Okay.
Already
doing
that kind of
thing. You want to? I can find you a riff. You can be makel. I can find you other. I can find you five reasons to be makel on the shayla. But I would try to do it very hard to put that situation. So you ask the chas to make sure that the aidim are this was these were Orthodox Jews. We taught it's a big yarmulke probably wearing a shepul. Just that you know that's how they do it in certain parts of the world. That's how they say hello. Let's be careful today. Okay. The other kibbutzim, there's a reading of the ksuba, there's the Sheva Brachos. You should go over with these people. Someone who's not observant, can he get one of the Sheva Brachos under the chuppah? I was asked that question today. I said yes, as long as he believes in God. It's Rav Moshe's true. He believes in God, his bracha is a bracha, and it's okay. Good. Now, yes.
For the brachos under the chuppah, is Rav Moshe Meikle also conservative rabbis slash not Orthodox rabbis?
It depends if they believe in God. If they believe in God, the bracha is a good bracha. Okay.
Most assume they don't believe in God.
I don't know. I'm not giving any sense. Do what they don't.
Can I just go back one second? It seems to be over the last number of decades, the situation of time and sphere has changed. It seems like it used to be that we're no chasnas before Lag BaOmer.
No chasnas?
Before Lag BaOmer.
No chasnas again?
Before Lag BaOmer.
No chasnas after Pesach?
Until Lag BaOmer. Used to be.
I thought you were saying differently. Before the no chasnas, after Lag BaOmer. Now the chasnas after Lag BaOmer too. The only 16 days are no chasnas, from Beis until Yud Zayin of year. Every other day is at weddings. Every other day. Thank God there are more people getting married. Bigger community. I'm making everything. Just let them get married. He's Jewish. She's Jewish. Marry him off. Okay. Okay, the actual chasana, you have to tell the girl she has to have a proper dress. She should be a modest gown. I've been burned. There's low cuts, sheer, see-through, every kinds of funny things. You got to say it nicely. That's not acceptable. It's not acceptable. People already know me. They know I'm not going to do such a wedding. I don't want to do such a wedding. One Saturday, I was surprised. Whatever's written down here on my notes is only all based on experience. So what I did was I looked the other way. You have to make a broch. Right, so I looked the other way. So even without a broch, you're not supposed to, have to watch your eyes. I was at a wedding some years back where they knew what better to ask me beside a kedushin. So there's someone else, the college rabbi beside a kedushin, and she came absolutely inappropriate, and I was calling for kriyas ksuba. Like ksuba is not even a bracha. We know who can read a ksuba. We're not going to mention it publicly. Anyone can read a ksuba. But I was very upset. So it was one of those huge ksubas. So the chaz got in front of me. I took the ksuba, I read it. So the rabbi felt it's not right. I'm not seeing the chaz in the kalas. He moved him to the side. And moved the ksuba to the side. Anyway.
Rabbi, you were saying Rabbi had more experience, so...
The younger people have to be more careful what they see.
How to express to them that this is not acceptable.
You have to say that. We have to dress in accordance with having this one. Ladies, please dress in accordance with Orthodox Jewish tradition that's having at the bottom of the invitations. The ladies, Kala, please dress in accordance. Yeah.
If a person's a young rabbi out of town where there's a fewer supply of rabbanim who can pick up the slack, and B, lower standards. Would Rebbe say in that case that maybe there's a little bit more latitude?
100%. If you are in a situation, which is the b'di'evet situation, you have to know how to deal with it. I'm trying to teach you the chatchil. B'di'evet is a lot of wiggle room on many of these things. But you know, every case is different. It's a new star, which I don't like, and that the Kala wears her, you know, her veil, headpiece, we'll call it, during the chuppah, and then she takes it off completely. New story. Comes out to the dancing with nothing on her head. This was unheard of. You look at all the wedding pictures with the videos until a number of years ago, you never saw it. But she covered hair at the end. She didn't cover hair at the end. At the wedding, the Kala always had that thing on her head. You look, all the dancing, straight through. Nice episode. Anaya Maisa. They started just taking it off. I can defend it. I have a lot of defenses, but I'm opposed to it completely because there's a shot of a daraisa, and you have to be told she keeps something on her head during the meal as well. Yes? Kalas always covered their hair, even if they never covered their hair any other time. When they went to shul, they covered their hair. When they got married, they covered their hair. That was the minimum. So let's not give up on what we had, at least. There's women who cover their hair, but not till tomorrow, not till tonight, whatever the chishbon they have. They're wrong, yeah.
Imagine for a second, is that a conversation you're going to have with about me? Is that something you would have in a conversation with me, you with the cousin?
When else? When else? Better time. If you have a better time, let me know. Happy to do it. I'm against tiaras. What's crowns? It's a pasuk. It's a gemara in Gittin. For a quote in Shulchan Aruch, a kala should not have a tarash or kesef. Now it's true that tiaras are probably not real kesef. It looks like silver. It's not real silver. I'm not a fan of these things. Okay. The band shouldn't be too loud. It's also your responsibility. I wrote it not more than 85 decibels. People, the chalilas lose their hearing. Oh, today I said, they're going to give out earplugs. I said, you're going like this. Why give out earplugs? Just make the band lower. What do you mean earplugs? Ridiculous. Not everyone wears earplugs. It's dangerous. Photographer. You ask me, I'm a good photographer. Photographers can either make a wedding or break a wedding. Really? And the rabbi should be on good terms with the photographer. Always, yeah, give them what they want. Because if you don't give them what they want, source. Proper hechsher on the caterer. That's also your achrayus. Now the seating, in my view, can be mixed seating, can be separate seating. Nothing bothers me as long as there's no fights. So you should bring it up to the chasan kala. They shouldn't fight.
At the chuppah or at the meal?
I'm talking about the meal. The chuppah really should be separate. It's almost always separate these days. But again, if out of town it wouldn't be separate, I'm not going to fight this battle. But no mixed dancing. That not. If you're the rabbi, we have to have mixed dancing. What are we going to do? Well, you know, you make a pshara with them, if necessary. Obviously, it's not a chachila. I'm in charge from the time I walk in till after they finish the shevet brachos. Then I'm no longer, but then I leave. There was a very distinguished rabbi and a very distinguished shul going back to the 60s that they had mixed dancing at the shul dinner straight through. But there was a deal. They understood it very well. So dinner, they had the dancing, the men dancing, the women dancing separately. Then they had birchas hamazon. The rabbi would go home, and then they struck up the other kind of dancing. Okay, I'm not blaming the rabbi. He knew what he, you know, everyone can fight their own battles, and then they give times and places. So if it's a non-negotiable issue, and you have to do the wedding, as you said, anyway, okay, so you say, so after the Shevet Brachos, it can't be. They'll be great. They'll make early Shevet Brachos. You'll leave earlier. Yeah?
Should the rabbi walk out if that would happen when you're still there?
Depends on the circumstances. I've always tried to walk out. I don't want to be in the room when this happens. There have been exceptions for various reasons, but as a principle, I just get out as fast as I can. It happened even recently. It's not dead in our community. I thought it was already over. No, it happened to me less than a year ago. It's just a story. And I just quit as I could. I just sort of... Okay.
I say if they did it before Shabbat,
I left. It was before Shavuot. Right. I left. Goodbye. I wasn't the final solution. I left anyway because I don't want to be give my stamp to him. I told him in advance, guys. These are rules. You can't keep these rules and don't ask for second solution. You break the rules on me. Most people keep their word. Most people, not always. It's not out of their control.
Do you have to have subsequent discussions with? Parents, meaning
I don't deal with parents. I deal with Chasan Kala.
So the Chasan Kala could agree to everything you said, but it, then it one gets the parents.
So that's not my job. It's their job to make sure that the parents are in agreement with what we did. So I understood. Okay. These days it's a mechitza. When I was getting married, they didn't have it, but now they have mechitza, so it's a good thing to have. Even though they're all see-through, as we all know. Let's find ways. The kala can come to the men's side, in case of Merakim, if she so desires, but the chosen should not go to the lady's side. Have all the girls dance around him. That's, we don't believe in that. Finally, you have to ask the chosen about the wedding ring. He should be plain metal ring, and should be bought by the chosen. Those are the two questions which we have to ask him in advance. Okay, do you have any further questions before we go on to the actual wedding day? So now we're discussing the what I call the premarital conference. Now the wedding day. The documents we'll do next time. For the wedding day, Rabbi Osai, it's a question of fasting. It's a minute to fast, but if they're not up to it, they shouldn't fast. We should be making it in a second. If it's a minute, it's not going to get sick. One of my main psalkim here is that the cost of the college to take the pictures beforehand. And someone says, oh, I can't see him, a week. The whole week has no mucker. Rabbi Arya Kaplan wrote the best book on marriage called Made in Heaven. The best. He's the encyclopedic knowledge of everything. The only source he can come up with for this is Minhag Chabad. That's the only source he quotes. Let's see each other for a week. So it has no real source. I can give you reasons. That's a good idea. I like the meeting, as a matter of fact. So how can I take pictures? We're going to see it before the wedding anyway, by the Badekin. It's before the wedding. Oh, that's different. Why is it different? So you can take, emotional. You'll keep everyone back an hour late with bleary eyes to come back at 3 in the morning because you want to be emotional. Come on, man. A little bit of kavod habrius. People have to go home. Tirch of the Sibur, exactly. It's worse. It's a tremendous Tirch of the Sibur.
Very difficult to convince people to do it. It's just the mice, they just don't want to do it.
I can only recommend. I can't force anybody. I have a better idea, though. Just crap.
That's what they're doing. The
crap.
They're photoshopping.
Yeah. That's it. Crap on the... That's it.
They crap the chasen and the kala.
Sure. Yeah. They crap everyone. Chasen and kala both. Everything's crap these days. Yeah. Why not? Can't tell the difference. Can't tell. Okay. If you're the Masada Kedushin, it's one of the few times in Jewish life they try to come on time. He said the chas will be chuba sheish mechetzi bidiyuk. So it's a Yiddish Rosh Hashanah. Biz the yidden velam kumen. The Jews will come. You know, bidiyuk. So much for that. What you should do is try to find out when they really wanted to start, and then try to come on time. And if you come on time, and there is a time when they want the chuba to start, you have to understand that you have to work backwards. You can't just go, okay, now go to the chuba. There's a whole prep beforehand. For example, it takes about between 20 and 30 minutes from the time they pick up their feet to go to Bedekin to he picks up his foot to go to the chuppah. Just reality check. Just next time you go to the wedding, look, check your watch. That's the way it is. Till they go, till they come, till they move to one room, to another room. It takes time. And most, it depends on the particular hall. Okay. Then there's a chosen's tish. At the chosen's tish, we sign two documents. We'll give our examples next time. Tanoim and Ksuba. The Tanoim, what happens is the two fathers, or someone else if the fathers aren't there, pick up an item, a handkerchief, a pen, a watch, whatever you want to give them, a yarmulke, whatever, anything you want. And in Mekabel Kinyan, the most time we use Rav Moshe's Tanoim, which say nothing, that's the first page in this handout you'll get. It just says he'll marry her, she'll marry him, and they won't hide from each other, they'll live a good, they'll be good Jewish lives, and he'll cherish her. Wonderful platitudes. And you created four kibbutzim. If you're the late, someone else will be beside it tonight. If you're on time, which you should be, you have three kibbutzim. Two edim and a koyri as that tonight. Sheesh. Kibbutzim are precious. It's created three, for this alone it's not because that. Three new kibbutzim. Okay, the mothers break the plate, and it should be broken carefully in a napkin. Don't take it out of the napkin, and if it doesn't break by the on the table or in the chair, take a hammer. Or if someone else break it, just be careful. People have gotten hurt breaking these plates. Then the ksuba, the chassid should be told in advance what it says in the ksuba, should get by made in heaven or some other English translation. And the proper way is that the chassid and the edim who are going to sign it should read the ksuba together with you, the Messiah Kedushin. Should get edim who understand Aramaic, hope the chassid knows Aramaic. Obviously, not every chassid has learned it. But if he's a yeshiva bach, he should be told what it says, at least not read the English, know what it says. Get to the word v'kanina, the most important word in the whole ksuba. You pick up the handkerchief, give it to the chassid, he picks it up, or the pen, or the watch, or whatever it is. Make sure to smile for the camera, because otherwise I have to do it again. and then you sign, the two Adam sign it. Make sure you know how to sign. Make sure you know the names. They should sign sitting down, otherwise it gets sloppy. I recommend strongly, if you're the Messiah Kedushin, you fill out the ksuba in advance. I did the one this morning. Fill out in advance. As a calligrapher, you have to fill out the dugma in advance, since you have to copy straight from you. Otherwise, calligraphers make mistakes, and then it's all kinds of things can happen. Oh boy, I don't have time to tell all the story. I think one story I'll tell you, because that involves the Gadol Hador. When the calligraphy started, it was the early 70s. So someone was so frum. Some people leave out the word v'kanin. They say it's not like a shikri, you put it at the end. This calligrapher was so firm, not only did he leave out the v'kanina, but he also left out the space to put in the word v'kanina. So I thought, who was the Messiah Kedushin? Rav Moshe Feinstein himself, but I'm all eyes, what's going to happen now? Takes out his pen, I kid you not, makes a carrot. Puts in the kanina. I kid you not. And on the bottom writes down, Tevis v'kanina nichtav ben hashitim is that kiyumo, and they go on. I went home, looked more of the chashan vishpat. It's very complicated. But that's correct or not correct. But it was all kinds of things, smudge and things. The kanina put it in. People forget to put it in the kanina. I'm in a wedding, so the guy's reading, right? Also, there's a pause. You know what that means. It's got the kanina. Now, some people, they just put it right there on the spot. How do you do that? They already signed, they didn't sign already. You put in $10 million also after they didn't sign. How you can do through it? But I've seen it. I can justify a lot of things with a ksuba, but it's not l'chatchila. So I filled the whole thing out before with the kanina, with all the names. Do it in the comfort of your own study, your own desk. You do it at the wedding, what's going on? People are jostling your elbow, and then the soda spills all over the ksuba. Anything can happen. Really, it can all happen. Always have an extra ksuba, by the way. Bring extras. You never know what's going to happen. You never know. You made a mistake. It'll get ruined. Always have extras. Okay. I don't put in last names in the ksuba. We'll get that when we get to the actual text next time. Yeah. Okay. The Bedekin is a serious time. I mean, they have slow Bedekin, a fast Bedekin. Still, it's pretty serious. It's bracha is given to the Kala. And I'm not a fan at all of picking up the chasn on shoulders after the Bedekin. I think it's like the prize fighter Rocky, the guy going like this, he's not even married yet. Later on, pick him up, not now. So I usually spend the time my hand on his shoulder, because everyone's trying to get underneath and pick him up, and I'm trying to stop him. So it's not right. It's the wrong time for everything. Okay, the procession, what we call. The shorter the better. In Europe, there was no procession. You just went to the chuppah. If you go to Eretz Yisrael, you can easily miss the chuppah. You go to the bathroom, you miss the chuppah. But then the chassid goes down, the cow goes down, and it's done. It saves a lot of time. But everyone wants, this one should march, this one, this one, this anagle, and this bridesmaid. I'm not a fan of all these things. I've been at weddings where they close to 100 people march down. Used to be weddings with 100 people at the whole wedding. 100 people march down. I kid you not. Big family, all the siblings and all the kids. You hit close to 100. It's not hard to imagine. Okay. Kittel. How many is the word kittel? You need proper nigunim. Nigunim, you should tell the chassan college. You have nigunim for the march down, tveikas to get nigunim, for the miadir, for the yivatziach, proper nigunim. Who what?
The
belt from the kittel. What's wrong with the belt? Yeah, make it undo your tie, undo your shirt.
What about
one sleeve in and one sleeve out. I have all kinds of menhagim. You have to wear a coat over the kittel, whatever you want.
They wear the raincoat, and I asked everyone, no one knew why.
Yeah.
It was cold outside.
That's right.
Is that really the answer?
Whatever the answer is, doesn't matter.
Jewelry,
women don't wear jewelry. It's also not really a requirement. All these things are not required.
Do whatever you want. Jewelry is just,
why can't she wear jewelry?
She gives it
to a friend, a schooler. Oh, I gotta get it back. Like, oh, I got some mices. I'm not opposed to any of these things, but it's not required. Okay, my Rebbe said the chosn should not go out to greet the kallah. He felt that was chukas agoyim. I know that they do in these days. They do in my day, so I'm opposed to it. Which way they should face the chosn kallah? Different menhagim. Face the crowd, away from the crowd. Where I come from, whatever you want to do is good. On many things I'm a liberal, but on some things I'm not at all a liberal. I'll tell you in a minute. The kallah goes around the chosn 7 times. That's arminic. You don't have it, you don't have it. But that's how it is. Then she stands on his right side. That's what it says in the Sfar.
Right side from their perspective or from the
crowd? No, the chosn is here and the kallah is on his right. No matter which way they face. They need a chuppah. Chuppah has to be a chuppah on top. A cloth cover, a talus, something like that. I frankly prefer, as the Rav, saying the Rav is not to use a microphone. Because if you look on the Sfar, it's a big shayla with a microphone. Very serious question. It's not your voice, it's an electronic voice. The same way as according to many authorities, the microphone is no good for the Megillah, to give an example. So it shouldn't be good for the Berachos Erusin either. Even the Chosn Kallah don't hear your voice. The microphone voice is so loud, the person sitting right next to you doesn't hear you. They're hearing the microphone. That's just the reality. So it's better if you can avoid using it. Who uses it? The MC. There's always has to be an MC. Calls up. You have to give him the text. I want to see every word that's on his text in advance. What is he going to say? If he improvises, he's going to make mistakes. Whatever you want him to say, just put it down on a piece of paper. Every word. Leave nothing to his imagination. Okay? So you want to use, he can have a mic. Ksuba, reading can have a mic, that's for sure. The Harayat also is probably okay. Should have to try to make sure that they have white wine or grape juice, because otherwise it's going to spill. Chalila, and the stain the gown, red, gewalt, that's what you don't want. Okay, so the rabbi, the first thing MC calls up the rabbi, the witnesses, designate the witnesses, yichud edim, and he has 2 questions. Is the ring worth a pruta? And the edim say yes, so the kallah should be willing to marry for a pruta. And he asks the chos, did you buy with your own money? He says yes. Then you have the kiddushin, the 2 brachas, you threw to the chosn's brachas, but the rabbi makes them. Chosn answers, amen. And then the chosn got a drink. If everything is intact, the chosn's father and the kallah's mother get a little to drink. Then the harayat should be said by the chosn. If he knows how to read, you have a cue card, give him the cue card, let him read it. In the old days, they would say it out loud. The rabbi did it at my wedding. He said the whole text. And after the wedding, so Rabbi Schachter, Zichrono Levracha, was nifta recently. I heard this afterwards. I was busy in the Yichud room, but I wrote the Chevron with Tumli. He said, Rabbi, what? This one of your good Talmidim. He said, I Rushalmi and Bikurim. And no one knew what he's talking about. He says, by Bikurim, that was really a Mishnah, that they, no matter how big, great a man he was, he didn't read it in Parashah himself, because you're embarrassing. He can read. Low plug, the rubber ready for everybody. He always, now I give a guy a cue card. Somebody else can't read Hebrew. So the old joke was, they'd say, haray, haray, at, mesh, mesh, say li. So my father joked, the constant says, say li. I witnessed one such wedding in my life. The constant was in Amoritz, and the rabbi said, Rabbi Rosenau was a rabbi. He said, say li, and then when he said, say li, look at my wife. This really happened. This is not just really, it actually really, really happened. So, yeah, correct the name. Okay.
You can't say the right.
Before. So make sure you call up the Adam, so these are the Adam. Frankly, in my opinion, as long as they're called up as Adam, it's good enough. You don't have to spell it out so directly. You go over it.
What's wrong with saying Lee?
That's what happened in my wedding. The Rav said Lee.
Right.
He didn't say Lee.
Why
Kudesh is Lee. who's this girl marrying anyway? She's marrying the rabbi, she's marrying the chassid. So that's why they don't have to say the words leave without the say first. But best thing is give him a cue card. Those are going to read. Okay, good. Then, after he finishes, because that's Moshe Yisrael, puts the ring on the right index finger, and then they read the ksuba, chassid gives to the kala, kala gives to a mother, shouldn't lose it. And then, if there's a speech, it should be then. They have sheva brachos, give seven different people sheva brachos. Make sure the chassid kala don't talk to each other. Then the other way, the kala's father, chassid's mother, give the drink. Again, it's simply everything's intact. Then it's imeshkachechi vishalayim. So they often sing it these days. They break a glass. The Rav used to put ashes on the makom tefillin at that point in time. You got to tell the chassid kala they shouldn't, forgive me, say this, for saying it, they shouldn't look at each other or touch inappropriately. I've been in such weddings where they can't get enough of each other. It's just inappropriate. The mother had to tell the couple, what are you doing? Stop it already. Anyway, then is Yichud. Yichud is 8 minutes. That's what we pass on the Halacha. And you should make sure there's no Yichud is needed, and you're really in trouble. We're not going to go into that right now. If there's a speech, you have to make sure there are no roasts. There shouldn't be Mevazel Chos and Yom Chuposo. And make sure that they should try to stay until after the Shavuot Brachos, if you have a Sagan Lushan. Try to bench early, as I said, before the dessert, if it's possible. Some have mitzvah tants. That depends upon the minute. And you got to tell the chassid kala you're available for them, you know, whenever they call for a personal question. It could be neither questions the first night. I've gotten questions, I told you, all kinds of hours of the night. The last thing I tell the chassid kala is, it's a good thing to tell them, if there's enough money in the family, they should try to help a poor couple in Eretz Yisrael for a small fraction of what it costs to make a wedding in this country. You can make a wedding for a poor couple in the Holy Land. Okay? I've also said my time is up. It's 1 o'clock. And I'll give this to you over turn.
You know, I got a copy.
You got it.
Yeah, that's you.
Okay. So we have a next, and then another 4 weeks, I think, from today is part two. We'll go over these documents. If you have any questions,